Hello.
Hi, good afternoon. Edward, Larissa here from Oakview Financial. How are you going?
Not too bad, yourself?
Yeah, really good, thank you. I was giving you a call today to go through your annual review. You still had time?
Yeah, all good.
Fantastic, thank you for that. Before we jump into it, I do need a complete security with you. It's just your full name, date of birth, and address.
Yeah, what is it? Edward Allen Wiseman, 29th of August, 72, and 98 Chris Ellis Avenue, Eskill Park.
Fantastic.
2558.
Amazing. Thank you so much for that. So the whole point of today's review is ultimately to see where you sit, to give you an overview of where your account sits, and then to see whether there's any advice that you would like to engage in. So I guess to preface this, I'm fairly new to the company. I've been with the company with Oakview for about 4 months now. I'm the new head of advice. So I help manage the team, look after the advisors that are here on staff, help with training and stuff like that. And I wanted to reach out to you today and give you a call and obviously go through your scheduled review. Now, the way I kind of operate and work things is I always like to, I guess, start with finding out what you would like to get out of this conversation. See whether, you know, you had anything that you specifically wanted to discuss before I kind of go into a general overview of things.
Okay. Well, the short answer is I'm still yet, to be honest, to set all my super up. So you'll probably see that it hasn't been fully set up and fully transferred over and things like that. So I do apologise for that. I've been away for work way too much than what is bloody acceptable, to be honest. But you get that with a big job. So
definitely.
Yeah. So that's probably. So to be fair, this particular annual review or something like that is probably going to be a fairly easy one for you, to be honest. I don't think I've got anything from my side except for, I know I've got to pull my finger out and get some stuff happening on my end, that's all.
Yeah, and look, what I can do is I can help navigate some of that with you and try and get everything implemented and finalised, because I have seen that your contributions from your employer have not been going into your account. So I would assume that they are still directing things back to SEBA.
Yep.
Which could mean one of two things. Either the account you had has remained open, even though we attempted to close it, or a brand new account with a brand new member number opened. It's either one of those two options, really.
Okay. Well, it's probably, even though if you're sent a thing in to say close it, and then they get money sent to it from my employer, what would they do? Would they open it or?
Each trustee is different. CBUS, in my history of dealing with them, which I've been dealing with them for a good decade, they generally open a new account with a new member number. If the contribution lands as the account's closing, there is a chance that they didn't quite close the account and then they just kept it open. Because it takes sort of 48 to 72 hours to kind of close the accounts in their back end, just administratively. So if they didn't quite get to the closure and finalization process, then it could just be that it's just remained open. And what I can do is I can send CBUS a rollover request on the back of the last piece of advice, because that piece of advice is still relevant once to close that account. So I can send another request to close that account. And if money arrives, good and great. If not, it's a matter of me reaching out to CBUS and getting the confirmation of your new member number. But if you've received nothing from them, it's quite likely that it's actually possible they have your old account still open, which makes it easier.
Okay. Well, that's good. But I'll have to check. I'm just on the cusp of getting paid for this month, but I'm not too sure where I sit as far as the super contribution from the company, because they only pay it every 3 months or whatever it is. So it could be anywhere in between that.
Yeah, if you're about to get paid now, I would say that more than likely you're going to get a contribution for the quarter, and it'll be for last quarter more than likely, because that's generally what I see is sort of the month after the close of the quarter, which we're in the seventh month, so our second quarter just closed. What I can do is if you haven't, do you know what date you paid?
It should be tomorrow. Should be 15th.
Yeah. Guaranteed. Yeah. It's always either the first week of the month, the smack bang in the middle, or I have a couple that do get paid sort of like last couple of days of the month as well. But generally speaking, are generally that 14th, 15th of the month. Well, what I can do is I can send you a contribution form. If you know what your payroll or HR's email is, I can send you that form. And I can send it to your employer, and I can CC you into it, so that way your employer can see that it's been sent, and your employer can then go to you and say, hey, we've been sent this from a financial advisor. Is this legitimate? Do you approve it? Is this where you want your contributions to go?
I'm happy for that.
And that way I can help you get that in place, so that way we can stop this cycle.
And you'll have all my details there, naturally, of account number, where it's going to go and all that type of stuff.
Yep, I have all of your account details and information, and I can provide them with all the forms that they could possibly ever want. That way that does that. The only thing I need is their email address. So if you know it.
Yep. It's accounts.
Yep, ACCO, yep.
Yeah, accounts at Green Ecotech, T-E-C, all one word, .com.
Perfect. I will send that to them today, CC you into it. Are you happy for your personal email to be the CC'd email?
Yeah, they're fine. They've got that already,
Yeah, perfect. I thought that might be the case. And that way we can get your ongoing contributions redirected. And then what I can do is I can waylay any rollovers until sort of maybe the end of the month. So that way, if they do pay a contribution tomorrow, this cycle, then it can land first, and then we can go from there. Okay.
Yep. That might be the best. Yeah.
Amazing.
I'm actually in head office. Our head office is in Melbourne. I'm Sydney, but I'm in Melbourne tomorrow, so I can hit them up. And find out where exactly
in the cycle
it's going to be paid. Yeah.
Perfect. No, that'd be really good. That'll give us a bit of an indication. And if they've paid it, then good and great. If they haven't, then we'll know sort of when that is scheduled.
Sweet.
So we can get that done. That's one aspect of your account setup. The other aspect of your account setup is your account doesn't have any beneficiaries listed on your new Hub24 fund.
So
it means that if anything was to happen to you at this point, yes and no. It basically hits what's referred to as probate. So it means that the trustee of the fund has to rely on any applications for the release of funds. So it means that theoretically you could have multiple people applying. It could delay your estate and stuff like that. Whereas if you wanted to, ensure that the money went to whomever it was that you want the money to go to, the best way to do that is to put the instructions on the fund, so that way the fund are able to actively pay that money quite quickly, quite easily, and it just makes a lot smoother process, especially when, people have lost someone significant to them. It's quite an arduous process to, even consider going through any form of estate claims, the paperwork that's involved. So a beneficiary form is really going to help that. Now, while I can't put that in place for you, I can pre-fill it.
I've got one here in front of me.
Perfect. Is that one pre-filled, or do you have to
fill it? Yeah, it is. It's got my account number on there, which I might just confirm, 2421893.
9-3-3 Yep. Perfect.
Okay. Yep. Terrific. I'll go through that. It looks like I need two witness signatures, so that might be be a struggle.
Well, it can be
I'll get that now.
Have anyone that you work with?
Yeah.
Get them to sign it with you.
Yep, yep. Okay, I'll get that done in the coming week. And I've also got a authorization to collect information.
So if you sign that one and get that one back to me, if I need to, with CBUS, I can put that in place with CBUS. So if I need to follow up on any on any of the rollovers and stuff like that, the authorization to collect information only permits us to collect information. We cannot make any changes to any other account.
Yeah, right. Okay. All right. No, I will. Okay, that's also got beneficiary nomination for the MLC insurance on there as well.
Correct. So you'll have one for Hub24 and then one for your MLC insurance.
Yeah, gotcha. All right.
Both are pretty similar in where, the way they run. They just look a little bit different.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And I can put now, I've got a self-addressed envelope. I just put that all back into there when it's all signed and shoot it up to you. That should be it, eh?
100%. And then once I get those, I will make sure that they're scanned in, and then you'll get an email confirming that they have been approved on the on your account. If there's any issues you find with it, we will 100% let you know, post them back out to you. If when you're filling them out, if you have any qualms or concerns, feel free to shoot an email through or give my team a call. To confirm. The biggest part is just making sure that each of the boxes is ticked. So if you're nominating, say, a child, making sure that you tick the child box, put their details in, making sure that whatever you allocate, so, you know, if you have two children that you're allocating to, it's 50% and 50%, or whatever your nomination of choice is, it equals up to 100. So you don't, you know, make it 49 and 49 and leave 2% floating. It has to equal 100.
Yep, no, that's right. It'll be 50-50, so.
Yeah. It's generally the way to go.
Yeah.
Don't have children.
Yeah, no, two's enough, man. Wow.
Yeah, I was stupid. I went back to that third.
Oh, my God.
The back seat of the car.
I was two after that. I mean, it helped that the wife at the time decided to move on, which was probably good. But, yeah, so that helped that situation. So two was more than enough.
Yeah. Sometimes it can be kind of convenient to just plod along with the two you have. Trust me, my third is my whirlwind. So be happy that you stopped with two.
Exactly. You thought the first two were that good. Oh, yeah, we'll have another one. And then you went, what the?
Pretty much. Yeah. I had a pigeon pair as well. I had a son and a daughter. And then I was like, you know what? Don't feel done. And I ended up with my third, a little boy. And, yeah, he's why I go grey.
Yeah. No, I'm hearing you.
There's always one in the bunch. And
There is. Yeah. My youngest, my daughter makes my hair grey, but but she's good. She's a good girl, but yeah, still makes it go grey.
We love them. We do, secretly.
Yeah, 100%. All good. All right. Well, I'll get them activated pretty soon. To be honest, I probably won't send them up until early next week.
Fine.
So I'll fill them out now. I'm in Melbourne for the rest of the week, but I'll get my sister and her husband to sign it over to witness it. So that'll be on the weekend.
Yeah. Look, it can even be some of the guys from work. It does not have to be anyone you know. It just has to be two people over 18. That's all.
Okay. All right. Well, I might even take it down with me and get a couple of people down the office to sign it.
Perfect. All right. So outside of that, I guess the main, like some of the things that we sort of go through during like this discussion is I want to run through a fact find, and that's just really simply to make sure that the details we hold on file are accurate.
Yep.
And then I have a few documents that I send you that give you a bit of an overview of where everything sits, where everything's running, and, you know, make sure that everything's kind of in place from there. So I'll run through quickly all of the details I'll have on file, and you just flag me if anything's wrong.
Okay.
So I have you listed as single. I have your email address as Edster, E-D-S-T-E-R, 72AU@live.com.
Yep.
You confirmed your address. I have two children, and they're sort of like 18 and 17.
Yep.
I have your next of kin listed as Kylie Cook.
Yes, my sister.
Perfect. I was wondering what the relationship was. And then I have you listed as a service technician, Green Eco Technology. You've been in the industry for 2 years. Oh, sorry, for 40 years, but with them for sort of 2 to 3 years.
Yeah, yeah. The first part you said sounded better than the 40 years, but anyway.
Hey, it means experience.
All right.
And I have your income at $110,000 per year. That's still appropriate?
No, I think it's $120 now.
$120, fantastic. And well, is all of that your basic
title?
Different title, same, same.
Yeah, pretty well.
Is that your base income? Do you get any bonuses or anything?
That'd be my base. I do get some bonuses, but it all depends on many aspects, I guess. So I say no. So just if we're doing good and blah blah blah, they might give us a little bit extra. But on top of that, I do get travel allowance and things like that, which I've been doing a fair bit this last financial year. I think I end up bringing home about $140 to $150 or something.
Oh, wow. Fair enough. You have a lot of travel.
Yeah, so, other than that, but I don't think that doesn't go onto your super anyway. It's just additional.
No, generally not, no. And that's okay.
Yeah.
Perfect.
Yeah.
And your super contributions are just the standard 12%?
Yeah.
And we're not salary sacrificing anything at this point?
No, not yet, no.
Nope. Okay. Is salary sacrifice something that we're wanting to look at? Any sort of like, because salary sacrifice is a great sort of tax reduction.
Yeah. Strategy. Yep, yep. No, definitely something I want to look at, but probably not for a couple of years. My aim is to probably pull up stumps for 65 and then go into a casual sort of arrangement. Just to keep a little bit of splash money coming in, so to speak. So definitely at the latest age 60, I'll be salary sacrificing, but if I can get a few financial things sorted out before I'm 55, I'll probably start doing a little bit at that age.
Yeah. So what are you wanting to do before 55 to be able to like look at salary sacrificing? Is there anything I can help with? We can look at sort of
It's just try and get the home loan down a little bit more. I've got a car loan I'm paying off my daughter. Just a couple of sort of expenditures that hopefully will be finalised in the next sort of couple of years. So
okay, perfect. The car loan, do you know what amount you have left owing on it?
Probably around 10, I think.
Okay.
10 or 12 or something like that, I think. Yeah, it's not much left.
Nearly there.
That's it. It was only a small loan to start with anyway. I think it was only about 17, but I got it over 3 years, so just to pump it back pretty quick. So, and then I'll probably want to buy another car for myself anyway, so... But I think by 55, my wage should also be a little bit higher to accommodate the, a bit of salary sacrifice without sort of nosing too much difference for now, so to speak.
No, perfect. No, that's good. And, I guess while we're on the assets-wise, I have that you have the two properties. One's the investment property, one's your principal place of residence.
Yeah.
And your home, it's about $750,000 value with about $220 owing.
With how much owing? $220.
$220.
Yeah, that's right.
Yep, perfect. And then your investment property, I have it sort of a $550,000 value, and it's about $500 owing. Are you on a principal and interest, or just interest only?
Oh, I'm on actually nothing at the moment. This is a something that I'm sort of chasing up, but it could be potentially a non-starter, to be honest. I put a deposit down on this investment property, and then for them to start, they it was down in Batemans Bay, down in New South Wales, which they had a lot of bushfires go through. They had a lot of flooding go through, so infrastructure got put back by years. So they haven't even released the lot ready to be built on yet. So
are you under contract for it?
Oh, I'm under contract as far as I've put a deposit down on it, and now they're just got to subdivide it and release it, and then I can get a home loan or a loan to
finalise
the land value and also start putting house value on it.
Yeah. Okay. Fantastic. I mean, that's good. The fact that you're under contract and you just haven't thrown a deposit without a contract is a good thing. I have unfortunately seen that happen. So it's delayed at the moment. The only aspect that we need to be, I guess, a little bit cautious of is that if that property doesn't get built for some time, you might be restricted on being able to get a loan. Because generally lenders only want to lend money up to about 70. However, there can be aspects where they permit, basically the use of your superannuation to pay off the remaining loan. So there are still ways that you can navigate that, and you do have a healthy balance, even like now, that it might be something that between yourself and the lender that you could look at getting that done in the future. At the moment, you're a little bit landlocked because of the fact that they haven't even broken ground. But once they do, that's obviously, like we have a lender that we can connect you with. So that way we can sort of help you through that. And we can sort of make sure we tie all of that into any future advice as well. So we can make sure that we, have everything running really smoothly on that front. The good thing about like investment properties is generally when we purchase them, once they're built and there, like any property generally goes up in value once it's established. And if that's the case and you do have the equity in it and you still have a little bit left on your mortgage, we can always look at refinancing your personal residence mortgage underneath the investment property. Because the way in the finance industry it's kind of quoted as is bad debt on your personal residence.
The reason
for that is because it's non-deductible debt.
It's
generally seen as bad debt just because it's non-deductible. It doesn't really add value to, the tax mitigation thing. But personally speaking, obviously, it enables you to get a home that you can live in and be secure in.
So it's supposed to be a dual occupancy house as well. So there should be two incomes coming from it as well. So
fantastic.
So that will obviously help the repayment. Well, what I do with it yet, I don't know. I might, keep the smaller one just as a holiday unit for a while and then swap it around when I retire, who knows. But it is a dual occupancy residence. When it does get built.
When it gets there.
when it gets there. I mean, it's dual occupancy at the moment. You can go and put two tents down there and that's about it. But anyway.
Well, I mean, you've got a deposit, technically. You could go camp down there for the weekend.
Yeah, well, that's it. And I actually can probably claim the visit down there too, so.
You probably could.
Yeah, I'm going down to see how my rental's going. Not that good, but I'm still there.
Perfect. And assets-wise, I see that you have the car. It's about $95,000 worth of a vehicle, correct?
Yeah, that'd be right. Yep.
Yeah. Do we have any other assets? Any like shares, collectibles, cash in the bank, anything like that?
No, I wish I had cash in the bank. I've just recently been given shares within the company I work for, but they've got potential to do something, but at the moment it's more of as a token of the work that we're doing, I guess. So they gave us, they come in over a 3-year period, and there's about 350,000 shares. At the moment, they're only valued at 1 cent a share because it's a startup company, so they can't give it away. So they've got a, but there's potential for them to go up to, yeah, as much as $4 a share.
Yeah.
So,
fantastic.
Yeah, if it does, great. I might retire earlier.
Do you know if you are locked into those shares? Like, do you have a liquidity aspect to it? So are you allowed to be bought out of those shares, you know, say tomorrow, or do you have to hold on to them until there's like a specific maturity date?
Oh, that is a very good question. I just signed it and said, okay, thanks. It was only worth $3,000 for me at the moment anyway. But I get them in three stages. So I get like 118,000 now, then another year, 118,000, then another year, 118,000. So that way they sort of keep me there for another 3 years. And my understanding is if they sell the business, well, those shares are still mine. So I can hold on to them or sell them, you know, after that 3-year period or whatever. So
okay.
The rest, I couldn't tell you. I'm not that up with all the financial stuff. I only know the money going out of my back pocket. That's the only finance stuff I know.
No, and that is completely okay with me. No, perfect. Look, you knew more information than most know, so I'm impressed.
Oh, I like that. Well, I'm doing well then.
Very well indeed. Perfect. So about $3,500 by the end of 3 years, providing they remain with that 1%, 1 cent per share price.
Yeah.
Otherwise, we could just be looking at more, which is great. Perfect. So currently our assets sit at about 1.4 mil across the house, the cars, everything. And then our debts are they sitting at sort of 730 across the car that you're paying off for your daughter, and the two homes.
Yeah.
So sitting pretty well, we still have plenty of time to be able to pay everything off. So I guess from there, the only other thing I kind of want to know is your estate planning aspect. So I have down that you put a will in place about 8 years ago. So that would have been when the kids were a lot younger, not probably close to being independent.
I do need to redo it again because I was with a partner at the time, and while we've moved on, we are still friends. So I'm not too worried that I had to quickly run out and do something. She's still in the family anyway. So, but I do just for getting it changed and getting it updated, I do need to do something.
Can I ask, your ex, were you married or were you in a de facto relationship?
It would have been de facto. We're engaged, so.
Never crossed the threshold. No, that's okay.
No.
It's just that any marriage or divorce that occurs when a will is in place actually null and voids the will. So if you had have been married and then got divorced, the will would actually no longer be valid. Could still stand up in a court of law as intent, but given it's 8 years old, it would be very hard pressed that a solicitor or a judge would actually permit it because it is so long standing. So it is advisable to at least look at your will every sort of 3 to 5 years. Eight years, look, because you have had a relationship dissolve, and the kids are now getting up there in age, you know, they're nearly independent. It's probably best to have a look at it. I can send you an email, the contact details for a lawyer. They are based up here, but they do have offices down south. Or alternatively, if you have a lawyer that you know and trust, I would just try and book in and just have a chat with them and get it updated. Generally,
yeah, I'll probably get a preset. I'm pretty right because the last one I got was like a friend of a friend type of thing. So, and I was quite happy with them. So, I'll probably just go back to them.
Perfect. No, that's good. Now, I did want to know, so you have a will in place, which is fantastic. Do you have a power of attorney in place with that will?
Probably not, because that's health, to do with health, isn't it?
Yeah, it's basically like a health directive. If anything were to happen to you and you were not able to make decisions, it enables them to make decisions, either health, financial, general, is what it sort of covers. You can get one put in place with your will. So when you go and have a chat to the solicitor, just talk to them about a power of attorney and enabling, like ensuring that you have one in place, just so that way, if anything does happen and you do lose capacity and are unable to make the decisions, it just means that those who you want to make the decisions, so whether it's your sister or whether it's the kids, your ex for that matter, they can make those decisions, and it enables you to write things down within the document as well. So if there's certain parameters, i.e. life support, you know, keep me on life support for 30 days, and then if there's no recovery, you can then disengage.
Pull the plug. Yeah,
so all of that can be detailed there, so that way no one's having to make hard decisions because you've set the parameters that they have to abide by.
Gotcha.
Yeah, so look, it took me decades to get one in place, and my kids are grown, so it took me a bit. It's one of those documents. It's always on the list. It's just really at the bottom of the list of things you want to do.
And it's something that you're living for the moment, aren't you? Not living for the.
You don't want to plan for it. Yeah.
No, that's right. But I mean, yeah, as we get older, we do have to. That's for sure.
Yeah, and look, I working in this industry, I have seen it too many times to really want to. But it does unfortunately happen where those of a younger age, you know, those who are single, you know, have kids and stuff like that, they leave their families in a pretty hard pressed place because there are no documents there. And the family are left having to make really hard decisions that maybe weren't previously communicated. You know, even with a will, you know, you get to document how you want your funeral to go, whether it's cremation, burial, set on fire and sailed out to sea, whatever the case may be, you can detail that. Because, you know, it's not always a conversation you have around the dinner table. Go and chase up a lawyer and have a chat to them and just have a look at getting those documents in place just to help things out and make sure that everything runs a little bit smoother if, God forbid, anything were to happen, but fingers crossed not. Perfect. All right. Well, that's pretty much everything updated on that side. The only thing I guess I want to go through, and you would have gone through one 12 months ago, is it's a risk profile questionnaire. So it's just a questionnaire that we run through that just allows us to check in and make sure that you're still invested in an appropriate risk profile. So, you know, your tolerance for any risk that may occur within the year's cycle is something that you're sort of prepared to take on, and you make sure nothing significant has changed. The one you went through last year was a lot more extensive because you know, coming on board as a client for the first time. This year, it's a little bit reduced. So I'll run through these quickly, and then we can have a chat about where your account sits now, okay?
Okay, all right.
So what's the most aggressive investment you've ever made? I can pretty much really answer that for you. That would be your investment property.
Which hasn't done well, so. Not yet. So that probably tells you about how much risk I want to take on there.
It does. Once investments have been placed, how long would it be before you would need to access your capital? So are you looking to access any of the capital inside your investment in the near future at all? You're still young and we're not looking at retiring anytime soon?
As investment as far as the house is concerned?
Yeah, the house, your super, any of the assets?
Well, I would assume it would be at retirement. I mean, super is obviously at retirement, so 65, I'd probably be starting to look at getting an income from that. And the house, I would probably do similar to that as far as using the rental money as an income. So probably not initially.
Yep. So we're still sort of 10 years away. But on that, your super, you can actually start accessing it from 60 under specific conditions.
Yeah.
So it's referred to like transitioning into retirement. So it comes into play like a really cool tax strategy where you can salary sacrifice some of your income into your superannuation. So we reduce what your assessable income is from your employer, from your paygee employment. It goes into your superannuation, so it only pays 15% rather than your marginal tax rate. And then you can actually pull money out of your superannuation tax-free. So
you can
get into the position where you basically don't lose any money in the hand because after tax and everything else, you just cut the tax man out of the income that you're earning.
There's
rules and regulations that you have to meet, but it's something we can definitely explore when you hit 60.
Yeah. No, that sounds good. So,
Still a few years away, but...
Yeah, I was just about to say years away, but no, I'll definitely keep that in the mind.
Cool. So inflation means that things are getting a little bit more expensive over time, which means that your money is worth less. But how much risk are you willing to take to be able to keep up with rising prices? So are you willing to at least outpace it? Do you just want to keep up with it? Are you, you don't want to take on any risk? Where do you sort of sit?
I think we should at least try and keep up with it, with inflation. I don't want to go backwards.
Okay, so we don't want to take on huge amounts of risk, but we want to at least try and keep up and maybe just outpace it just a smidge.
Yeah.
All right, perfect. How would you feel if 6 months after you invested, you found out that your portfolio had decreased by 20%? And that's just due to general trends in the financial market. So obviously the market is cyclical. We do go through cycles. Those cycles hit sort of every 5 to 7 years. Making a massive change, that cycle did happen.
After 6 months, it depends on the 12 months, but probably. I would, if it did drop down, I'd probably go into a corner and cry. and then if it went up, I would probably have a party.
Perfect. So would you view the downturn, like that little bit of market drop, would you view that as an investment opportunity? Try and invest more at that time to make more bang for your buck in the future? Or would we kind of just like hold tight and, as you said, cry in the corner?
I would... I don't really know. I mean, I understand, when the market's down is a good time to invest, but generally I haven't been in a position to invest when markets are down. It's something that I've never really looked into, and naturally my previous super was pretty well set and forget. So, this one obviously... So what you're saying is if we try and do something and it doesn't work out, would you be keen on putting more into it while the market's down?
Yeah, it's not that it doesn't work out. It's just investments, irrespective of what investment you are in, if the market goes down, you are going to, in some form or another, have a loss across the portfolio. So your portfolio is built up of little buckets, okay?
Yeah.
So you have lots of little buckets, and each one of those buckets rises and falls depending on where the market kind of flows. And whilst I would love to say that every year each of those buckets is going to increase in value, there are just going to be points where one of those buckets doesn't. And it can be due to any number of things. You know, the sector that bucket's invested in just isn't performing that well. Trump goes and does something stupid. Yeah.
Oh, well, that's every day.
Correct. It could be any number of things that kind of triggers that event, but the point is that if that event does occur, and look, realistically, that event is going to occur. So when that event occurs, not if, is that going to be something that you look at and go, nope, I knew that was going to happen. It's not something I can stop. It's not something anyone can really stop. I have a good, diverse investment. I'm comfortable with it. but right now I'm going to take the, chuck $1,000 in. I'm going to, put a little bit of money in and just buy some shares. And we can put it as a house analogy, right? So what you do is when the market's down, you go and buy your bricks, and you're buying your bricks at a lower price. And look, you might have only been able to buy $1,000 worth of bricks, but in 3 weeks' time, that $1,000 worth of bricks is now worth, say, $5,000, because the bricks have now inflated in price. So you still have the same number of bricks. You still have the same house that you were building. It's just that those bricks that you were able to buy when the market was down are now worth more to your overall portfolio. So is that something that you would look at doing, or is that something that, look, you haven't been able to do because you haven't had the cash flow available to you, but in the future, if it ever arose, it might be something that you want to do and something that maybe in 2 years' time we talk about again?
I'd say, in 2 years' time, maybe talk about it again. I'd say at least give the current setup a good year of sort of money going in just to get a bit of a hold on it. I also need to get my head around a little bit more of the investment side of things just to see what is going up, what's going down, and et cetera. And then also having, maybe the odd thousand or something to be able to do something like what you said. So,
Well, get rid of that car for your kid. Get rid of that debt. You might have a little bit more cash flow free.
You're not wrong. Not wrong. So,
perfect.
No,
and that's good. And look, a lot of what these annual reviews are, some years can just be a bit of framing, a bit of education. So we might not change anything in your portfolio, which realistically, very unlikely that I'm going to change anything in your portfolio. I'm probably just going to help you get everything squared away. But it enables me to have a bit of an educational conversation, teach you more about things that you may not have known, or reconfirm things that, we discussed 12 months ago. And then what you're going through now is the education process. And there's absolutely nothing wrong with that. It's a really good thing to go through. It helps solidify the knowledge, and then you pass knowledge on to your kids. And they get to learn. And as we do, they often get the head start that we wish we had.
Well, yes and no. you tell the young kids about what and whether they do it or not, that's another.
Oh, always the way. You tell them don't do that. I've learnt the mistake, and sometimes they have to go and stick their finger in the power socket to figure out that no, it does electrocute you.
Good.
Now, what kind of return do you expect to get from your investment over the long term? Are we looking for really, really good returns? Are we looking to be a little bit more conservative? So are we looking for like 8%+, or are we sort of more a little bit, conservative? Are we looking to kind of just get in that sort of, 4 to 6, 6 to 8?
Well, I think before I was getting probably 6-ish or something around, 5 to 6 with the CBUS. Or maybe even a little bit higher. To be honest, they weren't too bad. I felt they were not too bad. I know you guys have sort of said a lot more, but there's also a lot more risk associated with that, which I understand. I would think probably around, sort of that 8%, Is that classified as medium high?
Look, 8% is a good return for a diverse portfolio. There's absolutely nothing wrong with 8%. And realistically, look, year on year, you're not going to get 8%. As we said, cyclical markets.
Yeah.
But it's about looking for the average return that you're going to get over the long term. And if you're looking at 8%, then absolutely fantastic return, and that's going to compound year on year, and it's going to give you that growth that you need in the long term. We're looking at you are 53
this year.
Sorry to put a number on it. So we're looking at sort of 7 years before we're 60. And sort of 12 years before we're looking at sort of that retirement time frame. So 12 years is still a decent time frame to be able to compound and work on building the asset in preparation to start drawing down, retiring, moving into that casual employment, type of aspect, and just being able to kind of put your feet up a little bit. Work when you want to, not because you have to.
Yeah. No, that's what I'm aiming for. Is like when I hit 55, definitely not 67. No, but yeah, at least 55. Being able to kick back, maybe do a couple of days a week at Bunnings just to get me out of the house and a little bit of splash money and enjoy life.
No, perfect. Oh, with the knowledge you have from at that point over 40 years, like nearly 50 years in the electrical industry, you will be a wealth of knowledge at Bunnings. I'll come and shop down at your Bunnings, that's for sure.
Yeah, so that's the idea anyway. So we'll see. I mean, if I can do it earlier, I'll do it earlier. But at the moment, it's 65.
Yeah, just trying to get those debts knocked down and get a little bit of savings pushed through. Yeah.
Yeah, 100%.
Do you know what you're on track to finalize your home, like your personal residence, when you're on track to finalize that debt?
Because it keeps getting redone. So I think like at the moment it's probably still got another 20 years to go. So I'm only paying $1,600 a month or something on it.
Yeah.
So that's probably something that I'll start pumping into a little bit as well once the home loan goes and things like that. So
yeah. All right. Well, yeah. Because we can. So you've refinanced during the years and just sort of drop down, like increase the number of years before you have to pay it off, just to give yourself a little bit of a break.
And I'm sort of, at the end of the day, you've got to pay rent or something wherever you live. So even if I pay this until I'm 65, 70, it's still not a bad, it's a small rent to pay, if you know what I mean. So
yeah, $1,600 a month is nothing compared to what rental prices is now.
Yeah, exactly. So that's why I'm not too fussed. If it goes until I'm 70, I'm not too fussed. And I don't really at the moment plan on selling it either. So it'll probably just get over to the kids and they can do whatever they want.
Yeah. No, perfect. Amazing. And have your investments, including your super, ever dropped in value? So did you ever notice any of your assets drop in value? So your superannuation, obviously you don't know what the investment property looks like.
No. It'd only be the super, maybe. I think it might have dropped down. I mean, it's dropped down, every now and again, but that's the long term, so you're not too worried about it.
Yeah, so you just sat still, just watched it shift, sail by and kept floating along?
Yeah, pretty well. Sailed past, gave it a wave and went back to doing what I was doing. So there's not much you could do with it. I know the boat's out in the ocean, it's sailing by. Yep, see you later. Maybe see you in the next couple of visits, but at the moment,
No, perfect. And in terms of borrowing money, you haven't quite borrowed to do an investment property, but that is your intent to do so. But have you ever borrowed money for any stocks or funds or anything like that?
No, not stocks or funds, no.
All right, perfect. So, look, you've come out as sort of like a exactly where you scored last time. So you're sort of in that balanced growth kind of asset pool, which for your age range is kind of something that would be expected anyway. You're not outside of like your risk bracket for your age. You're perfectly well scoped within. You're not, high, low or anything like that. And that's, it's what we see. We see cycles of people when they're a lot younger. When you're talking to a 20 or 30 year old, they're all in. They don't really care. It's take the risk. They're the ones driving 300 down the highway. They're taking risks.
Yeah.
When we start getting a little older and a little bit more mature, we start to take reasonable estimated guesses, and we start backing our findings with research, and we stop taking those unnecessary risks, and we bed down what we know. And that's kind of where you're at, is you're not a massively, you know, you're not a massive risk taker, but at the same time, you're not completely conservative. So you're
I'm still trying to do 300 down the freeway, but that's another story.
Aren't we all? No.
Yeah, yeah.
Racetrack. I was actually having the conversation with my eldest, and I was telling him that I wanted to, now that, you know, the kids are starting to grow up, go and get myself a bit of a fun car. You know, get rid of the mum van, and I want to go back and get like a nice old like 86 Toyota Corolla.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, just go right back to the 80s, you know.
Yeah.
And he goes, oh yeah, well, I'll get that, and then you can drive it. And I was like, no, because I don't need you having that kind of car. You are going to wrap yourself around a pole.
Yep, 100%, 100%.
Absolute skid pigs, but anyway.
I'm lucky my kids can't drive mine. It's over there, license requirements.
I was going to say, it's a V8 or
something. V8, so they can't drive it, so that's good.
It's good. It just means you have to get them their own car.
And that's it. And which I've done. That's why my son's sorted, and my daughter's now getting sorted. So after that, then I can maybe get another car to play with.
Yeah. Get yourself a little toy car.
Yeah. Well, I've got me a little toy car. It's only on the weekends. It's actually not registered at the moment. I've got to register it this coming month. So.
What do you have?
Club Sport, one of the last HSV Club Sport.
No way. Lucky.
So I did a shitload of work on the engine, and it gets me from A to B reasonably quick. So.
Yes, it would.
Yeah,
there's something like a 6-liter engine.
Yeah, 6.2, but I put a supercharger on there and spent $22,000 on the engine just on its own.
So she would get you from A to B real quick.
It gets up and goes. So that's why the kids, they can't drive it. So
no, and you don't probably want them to either.
Yeah. Well, I actually taught my son in it, believe it or not.
Oh,
so because it's manual, and he wanted to learn manual, and which I was teaching him in my Hilux, and then we had to do some more hours, and I was like, oh, let's go for a drive to Canberra, and he drove it to Canberra.
Oh, beautiful. Oh, that would have been a nice drive too.
Yeah, so you know, he loved it, although it was sitting at 90 the whole way. I've never been that slow on the car.
Right? The things we do for kids,
I know, right? I know.
Oh,
it's
guys are insane. I just got one on the keys, so it does my head in.
Perfect.
Right. So, that pretty much finalizes that attribute of the review. So realistically, all I'm going to go through with you now is it's just the documents that we send out to you. Well, if you don't have a computer in front of you, it's not really an issue. But what I'll do is I'll email them through to you, and you can always look them through in your own time. What these documents detail is just an overview of your account as a whole. So it has your summary of your superannuation fund. It has your certificate of currency for your insurance policy as well. It's got all of that included, so you can see exactly what you have on file. We do a bit of a summary for the first page, so that way you can see exactly where it sits, rather than having to read all the documents if you don't want to. It shows where everything kind of sits. So that should come through to your emails pretty much now. Included in that, we also popped in what's called the Vanguard Index Chart. So what the Vanguard Index Chart is it just shows you where over the last, 30 years?
Yeah.
1994, that's too many years ago. It shows you from 1994 all the way through to now where different sects of the market have have sort of increased. So it shows you, based on like CPI, what CPI has increased per annum, which is sort of 2.7% on average, where cash is sort of sat, which is sort of, you know, that 4.2%, again, on average. There's obviously bigger years, smaller years across that, where, you know, bonds and property and shares, both, you know, international, Australian, and then, you know, just US shares as well. So in your investment, we have different holdings, and they cover a wide range of those different markets. And the whole point in why they cover the different ranges of those markets is because that way we can have your that good performance that we get from having those like international shares, but we can also have a little bit of risk mitigation and having some, you know, bonds, a little bit of cash sitting in your investment. So that way, you know, if the market does take a little bit of a dive, which it does, but you have that sort of safety net, you have that that risk mitigation tool within it. That's sort of one avenue of obviously how investments work. The other is that you know, you have your different sectors. So you have, you know, your electrical sector, you have your technology, you have your health, your finance and banking, you know, have your education sector, you know, you have all those sectors as well. And inside your investment pool, you have a good smattering of those investments as well. Again, the reason is because sometimes the oil industry takes a bit of a dive, but on the flip end of that, you know, you can have your health and your education avenues generally will take a bit of an increase on the back of that. So we spread out the risk by having different allocations across your investment. So that way you're not going to lose everything. You know, you don't go in and just buy 700 grand worth of Tesla shares, because then you're all in one bucket. You don't really want to go all in one bucket.
So I'm looking at that document now, actually.
Perfect. So you have a good role with where that all sits. So that way you're not stuck in one avenue or another. You've obviously got your MLC insurance. It was only put in place, you know, not even 12 months ago. Seven months ago, December, it went in place. It's got your $500,000 worth of life and your $500,000 worth of total and permanent disability. So if anything happened to you, your estate would obtain $500,000 worth of life cover. That's obviously going to pay out majority of your debts. It's going to give the kids not only your personal residence, but it's pretty much going to clear the debt on your investment property as well. So it's in a really good position. With your superannuation funds as well, that debt's totally cleared completely, and the kids now walk away with basically three properties. So they have good residual income, whether they end up renting those properties out and just continuing on with good rental income, or whether they liquidate them and then they're able to buy their own properties. That's sort of something that either you set up in your estate, like through your will, or they make the decision of, depending on how free you want to leave that. In the TPD space, or total and permanent disability, if you were never able to work again, $500,000 is payable to you. Now, I want to be clear in this. This policy is owned by your superannuation fund. So what that means is money is actually paid to MLC Life Super. So they actually open a superannuation fund on your behalf. That money is paid into that superannuation fund, and then it can be released to you. Generally, from an application point of view, it all happens at the same time. But from a tax point of view, if the benefit for your total and permanent disability is paid to you before you're 60, it's up to 22% taxed. There are ways that we can decrease the tax if you do end up being in that position, and obviously you would engage us, we would help you out to reduce any tax liabilities and work with you to make sure that you know you have an income stream, we can pay out your debts, we can do what you need to do if that's the way that happens. Touch wood, it's not going to. And in the life insurance space, if it's paid to the kids, if they're non-tax dependent, which they're pretty much on the edge of being non-tax dependents once they're over 18 and you know, no longer relying on you, then it's up to 17% taxed from super. That goes across any superannuation benefit. So it's 17% taxed on any taxable benefit for which the majority of your superannuation is taxable. So it's just something to sort of keep in mind. It's still would mean that your debts are totally paid out anyway. But again, hopefully we're not relying on these benefits. They're there as a in case we crash the HSV into a $2 million house, not because we intend on doing so. Okay.
Yeah.
Perfect. Now, outside of that, we included our financial services guide. So it's just a guide that we send out always. And we also included what's referred to as an FDS, so it's a fee disclosure statement. So it just discloses the fees that we were paid for the last 12 months and then the expected fees that we would be paid for the next 12 months in helping service you as a client. And then the last form is the fee agreement that we can implement onto your Hub24 fund. So it's just the consent form that enables us to continue charging that 1.65% on your fund. And enables us to just continue servicing you. So moving forward, if there's, of course, anything and everything, we're going to work to do it. And as I said at the beginning of the conversation, what I will do for you today is, A, send you a bit of an email summary on what we've discussed. So that way you have these documents plus a bit of an email summary. I will then email your accounts department with your contribution form to get that all rolled over. In that email, I will ask the question, you know, what pay cycle are we at? They may not come back to me directly. They may go to you, and that's okay.
Okay.
If they do,
you mean the super pay cycle?
Yeah, the super pay cycle, yeah. They may just come back to you, and if they do, then that's okay. You can flag it with me, forward me the email, whatever the case may be. Sometimes they do come back directly to us, which is always nice. And what I will do is I will hold off a couple of weeks till sort of just before the end of the month, and then I'll process that final payment from your CBUS fund. That way we can get that consolidated. If it arrives, good and great, I will let you know and flag that with you. If it doesn't, less great, but I will still flag that with you anyway. So that way we can hopefully do a little bit of research and find out where things sit from that point of view. All right?
Okay. All right. Now, I've got probably two questions. Looking at this, the review on that now, it's got approximate benefit of my Hub 24 is 422K.
On the first page of the...
On the first page,
Yep.
So that, I'm guessing, if I was eligible to retire, that is what the benefit would be, 422.
Yes,
or close that, to.
As of today, it sits at $423,028.
Well, and there's probably 6 months or something of stuff
to, go over with.
To come in for the receiver, so that's all right. Now, what is, how is that for someone of my age? That's the key question I keep asking myself when I see things. Yeah, how much super should you have at a particular age to, you know, retire comfortably?
Yeah. So it all depends on what. I have 53-year-olds who have under $100,000. I have 53-year-olds who have a million. It all just depends on what kind of lifestyle you want to live. So
yeah.
Based on the assets that you have, and if this investment property does provide, like does come to fruition, and my hope is it does for you, we can obviously have another conversation as to what that looks like once it's built and what, you know, once it's asset tested, we know the actual value and what it's going to generate as an income. But once we know that information, what that's going to do is that's going to give us a good guideline as to what your income is going to look like in retirement, because an investment property provides income. If it's dual occupancy, you've got two incomes coming in. And what that's going to do is that's going to provide us with an ideal of where your income streams are. And once we know where your income streams are, we can really sort of nut down on that retirement phase of life. Now, currently sitting at $420,000 a year, what that's going to do is that's going to enable you, let's just say if you were 60 today and you decided to retire, right? That's going to enable you to basically walk away with a minimum of about $16,000 per year.
Because you're allowed
16 grand. So you're allowed to pull out a minimum of 4% to a maximum of 10%. now right. 420,000, so it's somewhere between 16 and 42 grand that you would be able to access sort of, you know, from that time frame. Yeah. Now, if you were to pull out, you know, 420,000, 10%, if we ignore growth and we just, you know, base it on just withdrawals, you're looking at sort of a 10-year time frame. Now, we know that it's going to continue growing. And generally speaking, you know, you can kind of expect, let's just say, a conservative 5 to 6%. So realistically speaking, what you're going to see is you're going to see the account decrease by about 16 grand per annum.
Yeah.
So what that's going to do is that's going to kind of leave you about with about 26 years worth of an income from just the superannuation fund. Now, your home is a non-assessable asset under Centrelink. The investment property becomes assessable if it's living, if it's for an investment property. We can only have one primary residence generally. So what that means is that now you're going to be asset tested for that investment property. So it could mean that you don't have access to Centrelink in your retirement from age 67, because 67 is the age for Centrelink age pension. So if we're retiring at 65, it means that we're living solely on the assets we've built, superannuation and any personal assets. Until we hit 67. From 67, we then have access to the age pension. And if we're eligible, that's another income stream. And we don't look at it as a dirty thing, because the fantastic thing about the age pension is the pension card. The pension card gives us a relief on cost of living. There's extra benefits that come from it. Cheaper registration.
Don't you get the pension card anyway, and then... Anyway, or if you've got too much assets, you don't get the pension card?
Correct. If you have too many assets, you don't get it. If you can get on a part pension, so, you know, even if you earn a dollar a fortnight, get access to that. So that's, you know, sometimes that's the hope, is that we can get access to that. Now, right now, I can't map that out, because I don't know what that investment property is going to look like. Once we have an idea as to what that investment property looks like, which hopefully in 12 to 24 months we're going to have more of an idea, we can then really start mapping out that retirement phase, which is good, because we still have a good 10 years before we're planning on doing anything, and five years before we can have fun with the tax planning side of things.
Gotcha.
So for now, like, if you were 60 and about to retire today, you'd still have a good 26 years sitting in the fund to be able to draw down... you know, and that's pulling 42 grand a year. So if you'd pull 42 grand a year, you'd have 26 years of, like, you know, of decent income that could help support you. It's just a matter of making sure that you have a decent amount of income, because jumping from 120 down to 42 would be a bit of a shock. Obviously, now you have the mortgage and the kid's car and all the rest of the stuff. Come retirement, we're not going to have that. That's going to decrease the cost of living that we need, because we're not going to need to pay a mortgage. We're going to be debt-free.
And you say you can only pull 10% out at a maximum.
That's from 60 years old. So I went from 60 to 65. From 65, you're free to take whatever you want.
Okay. So that's right. Yeah, because I don't, unless medically, I plan on at least 65. So, and I think when we were doing the initial, projection thing, it was close to a mil or 1.2 mil. So I thought, oh, that's not too bad. I think it was about 200K more than CBUS or something like that. So,
And that would sort of be on par with what I would expect based on where you sit now and the fact that you're still looking at 12 years.
And that's about average? Is that about average, above average of where other people are?
It's hard to say, like, that it's average or above average. It's just, it's sitting well. I can say it that way. It's not about being average or not, because there's plenty of guys that haven't worked and, you know, have had years worth of non-working. But no, sitting with 400,000 in your super by 50 is sitting really well. And you're on a good trajectory to be able to continue growing it. With the money that you earn, the contributions that you have going in, we're sitting real pretty.
Yeah, good, good. That's just want to make sure I've got a plenty to enjoy my retirement with.
To play with, yeah. Well, I want to see another HSB.
Yeah, well, I'd love another HSB, to be honest, but no, I've already ticked that box now, so yeah, I might go Ferrari next. So.
Oh.
that'll be the next one, but I think I might need a few numbers to drop down on for that one from the lotto. We'll see.
Definitely. Oh, perfect. Well, is there any other questions? You said you had two. Was there another one you wanted to ask?
No, I think that was sort of the two
combined.
Yeah, combined. So it was, yeah, A422, is that sort of good for my age at the moment to be in there? And then the projected one,
yeah.
I guess. But, yeah, projection I know is a bit hard to go off right now. But I think looking at the growth and that for 10, 12 years, we're probably looking there.
Yeah, we're looking really well. And if we keep doing what we're doing, in a couple of years' time, if we get that car loan paid off, we can start doing a little bit of salary sacrifice, adding a little bit more to bolster. Come 60, we can start playing with some tax strategies to just help you out with the tax savings side of things. You know, we can take it step by step and keep playing with it. Hopefully within the next 12 to 24 months, we know what's happening down in Bateman's, and we can take a leap there and have a more solidified idea as to what your retirement's going to look like with that asset in play. Or if that asset's no longer in play, then we'll be able to take that consideration too.
Yeah, sweet. Okay. No, I think that has enlightened me. So, the point of what would, if I was to do a salary sacrifice, what type of a figure would be, I mean, obviously the more the merrier, I get that, but what figure is, you're going to see some good results? Or like if I put in $100 a week or $100 a month, you're probably not going to see a great deal from it, but what?
I know it's a loaded
and open question.
No,
but.
No, not at all. No, it's not. It compounds. So even $20 a week can contribute a lot because it compounds over time. The aspects that I always like asking in this situation is what can you live without? And that's what the question really nuts down to is what is free in your cash flow that you can live without? And that gives us the answer as to what you contribute. And then I can just reverse the tax aspect to find out what you can live without, say, $20 net in your take home. Well, based on your gross income, $20 net may work out to be, say, $32.15. So it'll be $32.15 that your employer contributes, and you're only going to feel a difference of, say, $20 in your back pocket. Again, random figures that I just pulled. I have not done math on that.
Gotcha. Is there a limit on how much you can salary sacrifice? I think it's 20 grand or something, or is...
30, and that's not salary sacrifice, that's just concessional contributions. So with your employer on your 120 grand a year, your employer already puts in 14,400.
Okay.
If you 120, 12% contributions, they would put in 14 grand on your behalf already. So that means that you have room up to $15,600 that you could put in within the financial year without hitting what's called the concessional contribution cap.
So I could in theory go another grand a month and still sit under that.
Okay.
All right. No, I'll definitely think about it in the next year or two. As I said, I probably would definitely want to do something by 55. And then, as you say, when we hit 60, we can really have some fun with the equation and try and get a bit better out of it.
Perfect. We'll touch base with you in 12 months anyway. Hopefully we can get everything consolidated quickly for you. And from there, once everything's sitting in the account, if you have any questions, you can reach out to us. But otherwise, we'll just kind of touch base with you sort of quarterly just to see how everything's going, make sure that life's still ticking along. And, you know, we can answer any questions that you may or may not have. And then otherwise we go through and do these reviews every 12 months where we have a good in-depth conversation, make sure that everything's still hunky-dory and sitting where it needs to, and make any changes and tweaks as we go along.
All right, that sounds good.
Perfect. Well, if there's any questions at all, please feel free to raise them. But otherwise, you're going to get two emails from me this afternoon, one to you and accounts, and one personally to you with just a bit of a summary. Okay?
Yes, terrific. Awesome. Thank you very much for that. Thank you for your time and explanation. It's been great.
Perfect. No problems at all, Edward. You go and have a fantastic afternoon, and we'll talk soon.
Okay, you too. Thank you.
Bye. Bye.